With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My next interview is with Alba Soteraclua. She is a director who is in town for Hot Docs this year, and we chatted about her new film, Commander Arion. And this is an important film. It's a great film. You'll be on the edge of your seat throughout. It's a film about liberation and traditional cultures and freedom and struggle and emancipation. It's about ISIS and it's about equal rights. And we uncover quite a few different sort of subtexts in the film, and we talk about the layers, and we get into democracy, and Alba talks about making the system tremble, and it's really about why coalitions can work. It's about theory over practice. It's about implementing a feminist state. I hope I've captured your attention. You're going to want to listen to the interview, but I think more importantly, you're going to want to see the film. Alba Soteraclua coming right up. But don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my podcasting and my speaking, and of course face-to-facelive.ca, where you'll see a whole host of new interviews in the very near future connected to film and doc, and I think we've got some really interesting writers coming up in the near future as well. So stay tuned for Alba Soteraclua talking about her new film, Commander Arion. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here today with us. Alba Soteraclua is with us here today to talk about her new film, Commander Arion, a story of women, war, and freedom, at the Hot Docs Festival. We're in Toronto at the, I'm not even sure where we are, but we're in the King's, what is it, the President's Room,
the President's Room of the Women Art Center, which is a really old institution in Toronto.
Very old institution. This is a gorgeous room. We've got some original group of seven hanging on the wall. I mean, we're in good company.
Yeah,
this
very good energy.
Really quite remarkable. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you to you for giving me the chance to speak about the film.
You're welcome. And first, right out of the gate, congratulations on the film.
Thanks.
And on Hot Docs, and on getting here safely. you just arrived?
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, welcome to Toronto.
Thank you.
And yeah, congratulations on the film. It's a, at times, difficult film to watch, and yet compelling and engaging and fascinating. Mm-hmm. And entertaining as well, in a sense. You know, I always sort of hesitate to say a documentary film is entertaining, right? Because this is a story of women, war, and freedom. This is a serious film. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the film and the context around it? Because I know there's a lot going on for you in this story.
Yeah. So this is a film that follows the life of a very special woman. Her name is Arion, Commander Arion. She's the commander of the YPG. She's one of the commanders of the YPG. And the YPG is the Women's Defense Units, which is a military body that was formed in the north of Syria in order to fight ISIS. And it's made up only by women. And that's what makes it very special. First is the fact that it's only women fighting there. And second is the fact that they are united to fight against ISIS, against Daesh, Islamic State, that was trying to get on into their lands. But they're also fighting to... They are fighting for equal rights between women and men in Syria. So they want to... they are implementing a political system where women have the same rights as men, because also for them the enemy is not only ISIS or Daesh, but patriarchy in general.
Right, patriarchy, the culture, the history, and so on.
Exactly. And for me, it's like, I think it's unique that this is happening in the heart of the Middle East, which is a region that from outside we all believe it's a region of people who has a different mentality, that they are really unable to think on terms of feminism.
You know what's so interesting? I mean, when you tip, and sorry for the sexism here, but typically when you think of military, you don't typically think
at all
of women soldiers, and you certainly don't think of the grittiness and the, and even the establishing shots in the film and this this young strong leader who's dealing with her wounds.
Exactly.
And some of these deep existential statements that she makes right out of the gate about life and death, and it's really remarkable. So good for you for mixing it up in kind of a new way. You know,
The film has these two layers.
It has more than two.
But in terms of like the way we build the narrative.
Yes.
When I started this film, I thought I was making a film. My plan was to make a film about a liberation.
And
I wanted to show this process of emancipation that these women are going through, through the liberation of Kobane, through a mission that Ariane was leading on. They united to break the siege of Kobane. Kobane is a city in the north of Syria that was besieged by ISIS. And that's how it was during my first time of shooting. And but later on, she got wounded. I'm not doing a spoiler of the film.
No, this is something we find out in the very beginning of the film. You need to see the film, by the way.
So then something different happened, that it was to have the chance to see how this really strong woman faced this other challenge in her life, which was not only to fight ISIS, to be in a society that is patriarchal and where her rights are deprived as a woman, as a Kurdish, as a person who belongs to minority. But then she had another challenge to face, which was a really physical and painful wound. And for me, through her process and the process of the film, what she shows us, among many other things, is that you cannot surrender, never, in front of anything.
Well, that without a doubt is a theme. And as my listeners know, any great documentary film for me works on a dozen different levels.
Yeah, exactly.
And you touch so many issues. I mean, we're talking about war and violence and patriarchy and leadership and responsibility and choice and freedom and emancipation. I mean, it's remarkable. But the questions that she asks specifically of some of the younger women, the recruits, what kind of woman do you want to be?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about some of those conversations and the context for that.
Yeah, and what is amazing in that context is that there are not so many choices for those women
at that
stage, at that point. It's like those women live and belong to villages which are in a state of war, and they belong to a society that is really, how do you call it in English, traditional.
Yeah, sure.
So most of these girls, they are meant to marry when they are really, really young.
Right.
So the choices are either to get married and have kids at a very early stage and not having the chance to participate in life, in the politics, in the society, apart from, I mean, your life is limited to stay at home with the kids. And moreover, now there is also this threat of Daesh, of ISIS, coming to your land and imposing a system which is even more obscure and patriarchal. So this chance, you have this choice or the choice of standing up and facing this enemy. So this is the choice that many, many women took at that time. They are still taking this, the choice of standing up in arms.
And would you say that she would call those two choices both different forms of slavery? So the idea that you only have this choice as a woman to become a wife and a mother and stay at, you know, the traditional, would she actually call that a form of slavery?
She calls this a form of slavery. She's completely.
So this is this is liberation. This is of women, war, and freedom, right? This is way more than just about freedom for Syria. This is more than freedom for Iraq. This is more than freedom for the Middle East.
Exactly. And although it may seem like it's really tough to accept from our side, but for her, this struggle, which includes an armed struggle, it's part of this path to freedom and emancipation.
Sure. And the path to freedom. I mean, the way you unpack that in the film. I mean, this is to say that it's a journey is an understatement. It's not even fair. I mean, some of the images that you use and the metaphor of war. I mean, this really is. There's a long road ahead. This is victory is not around the corner.
At all. Yeah. Because what they are facing, it's huge. I mean, ISIS are the smallest enemy they are facing.
Right.
And that was actually quite easy to defeat because they've defeated ISIS. They are so strong. And when you try to imagine how can this happen, because ISIS, as we see it from the West, I mean, before I went there, to me, ISIS was this really black, terrible force.
Right, sure.
I had seen some of these awful videos of beheadings in the internet. I was scared.
Of course, yeah.
And then you are there, you have them half mile away, and you realize they are all of these images, propaganda, and they are not. I mean, of course, they are fearful and they are really aggressive, but. They are not organized, and they are not the way they fight. It's very different from the way this woman fight. For this woman, what is at stake is everything: is their, not only their lives, but their dreams, their land, the families, everything. While for the other side, for Daesh, most of them are mercenaries. They don't belong to that region. They don't have any ideology that they are fighting for. They are not committed to a dream.
They're fighting for a paycheck.
Most of them were fighting for money.
So this isn't about passion and purpose
at all.
Is that right? Isn't that? Well, then I would say their enemy, I guess, in this case, the YPG is probably something to be reckoned with from a militaristic perspective.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
When you've got that passion and that desire, it seems to me that's an uphill battle.
That's exactly, and but sadly, the big challenge that they face, the big enemy, is the state of things in the world.
When you say the state of things in the world, do you mean internally,
globally? I mean globally. What they are trying to, I mean, what they have already implemented, it's something like they've made a revolution in that place, like because taking advantage on the. Chaos,
right?
Because of a situation of war,
sure. Yep.
And on the fact that they got rid of the power of the Baath Party and Bashar al-Assad, they got rid of it. They could take over their institutions, and they implemented a new political system in which the question of gender is central. It's a feminist approach to it. And I will put you a very clear example to that proves this. For instance, they made a B leadership. I don't know how you say it in English, but all political roles, like I don't know the head of any institution or the city, no, the head of the city or the president, everything is duplicated. So there is a woman and a man for absolutely each role that has to do with decision making.
Oh, okay.
And that's already working, and it's implemented, and it's functioning. Also, they believe in real democracy, like direct democracy. So they organize.
I don't know what that is.
They organize the.
I'm kidding. Real democracy. What is that?
Yeah, exactly. So they organize the system where the decisions are being taken through the base. So they have assemblies, which is something that they just. The only thing they did is to connect the way that communal decisions were taken before in the traditional way. So they organize people in assemblies.
Sure.
And they have assemblies in each neighborhood, in the cities, and then in a bigger scale. And these assemblies, some of them are mixed, but there are also many of them that are only for women, because traditionally women there, they never had the chance to speak out, and they will not speak out if there is men in front. So they have their own spaces where they can speak out on the when they are without men in front. And these decisions, the things they ask for and the decisions they take are taken into account. And this is happening.
Right.
And this is something that the things that can make the system tremble are not Daesh and are not ISIS anymore.
Right.
But the pressure from, first of all, from whatever system will be implemented in Syria after the war, and also because will they have the support of the international
community? Yeah.
Because the main challenge they have is that they don't want to declare themselves a state. They are not a state. They want to live within the Syrian state, but they want to have an autonomy. They do not believe in the idea of the state because they believe that the state embodies itself, the patriarchy.
Right.
Because it...
So if they align themselves with that, they're saying yes to this notion of patriarchy.
Exactly.
And they're turning their backs on it completely.
They say it perpetuates the unfairness.
I
miss words in English.
No, unfairness is good.
And the imbalance.
Imbalance,
in power.
Sure.
Power
sure.
relationships.
Sure,
and
sure, yeah, absolutely.
So what they...
Balance of power is good.
Yeah.
Is that the threat that they're fighting against? Because that comes up, right? This notion of threat is there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's the metaphor of the film, right? I couldn't believe some of those shots where they're standing at that half wall and they're looking out and they're saying, oh, I think there's some fighters over there and there's some fighters over there. And I wanted to kind of shout out, would you get down? Somebody's going to shoot you. Like,
actually, at that situation, when I found myself... Being at the front line is something I'm not a journalist. I'm a filmmaker, so I had no idea where I was getting myself into.
I'm bad. Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm not sure if I know. If you think when you are in the middle of a situation where where there is a shooting, or you don't have time to think,
you're there.
You're just focusing on stepping out of the not being in the middle of where the shots go, but. So it was only two times, like two moments, that I was really in the middle of this kind of situation.
Okay, gunfire.
And I spent there months, so it was not that bad. Although we were in the front line, being in the front line usually it's something like the war is about waiting. You wait.
It's great.
And suddenly something happens. And you just don't have time.
So good.
Yeah.
That's a great line. The war is about waiting. Yeah. I love your line too, by the way, about making the system tremble.
Yeah.
Right? Because isn't that what kind of is going on kind of all over the world in different ways? And isn't this what we hope that we can do through social media and journalism and filmmakers like yourself getting voices and stories into the world for others to hopefully see, learn from, and I'd like to think become wiser, you know, as a result of
pressure. I really think we all have a lot of power.
Advocacy.
If we unite, we have a lot of power to put pressure into our governments, into our states, so things change.
Yeah.
And for instance, there was a great example in this the fight that these women are taking, that when there was in Kobane, in the city that it's portrayed in the film, there was this huge battle where the Islamic State was about to smash the city, mm-hmm. with the they were about to smash the city, and thanks to the pressure of the public opinion internationally, the coalition it was the first time that they intervened with planes. So they stopped. They just bombed.
So it actually worked.
Yeah, exactly. It works. It works. And the problem is that many times information doesn't reach.
Yeah,
because there are many powers that are there to block the information
through. Sure.
And I will put another example. Now, recently, where my protagonist is, she had to leave, but they were in Afrin, which is another region in the north of Syria, which is also Kurdish. It was a region that the war had never reached there. It was beautiful. It was economically, it was going, it was all, people there was living okay and peacefully. But because this Kurdish woman and all this Kurdish community in the north of Syria, they are by the they are considered enemies for the Turkish state, because Turkey has an ongoing war against the Kurdish community in Turkey, because they consider them because some of them belong to the PKK, which is an organization that is considered terrorist by Turkey and by other countries. All of them, but some countries consider it. So, for some reason, Turkey considers that this woman have somehow an affiliation with this group, although the West and, our countries consider them allies because they've been fighting together with this woman against the Islamic State. And recently, Turkey attacked directly. They entered Syria by tanks, and they killed many of my friends of mine, many of these women fighters, who are only fighting to defend their lands from ISIS and to implement their feminist state.
Right.
And among these people that were murdered there, there was a friends, and among them a really, really good friend of mine. Her name is Anna Campbell. She's English, and she was working there to help.
So I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was, and with this, what I'm trying to say is that there are power, like Turkey is the second most powerful country in NATO, so that makes it very complicated for the states or the states that to say anything against this. But it's us; we have the power to claim and to ask our states to punish Turkey for these acts and to let, because if we don't do anything, Turkey will smash this revolution.
It seems to me this is why these film festivals like this and conversations like this and advocacy campaigns do matter.
Of course,
And journalism and documentaries and writing blogs and all of these things, and why you can make a difference through Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, as crazy as that might sound and almost as insignificant as it might sound, it's got to go beyond that, right, to get to action. It can't just be all about sending tweets and Instagram posts. But it's, so was that, did that occur, was that just a blatant act of racism? Or
the,
was it?
The attack was with the, what they claim is that they were bombing terrorists. So they used this war, but terrorists, at the moment, the only country that considers them terrorists is Turkey.
Right.
Because, as I said, all the coalition has fighted by shoulder with them. So, although they were attacked, and as I said, they for instance, they were fighting with the U.S. in Raqqa to finish with the...
And she talks about that as well.
Exactly.
She wanted to go to
Raqqa.
That's right. I'll feel better if I could go. Yeah, which cracks me up. Let me at him. Is there a suspicion to the YPG because they... I couldn't help but note that they refer to each other as comrades.
Yeah.
Is that upsetting anyone?
Yeah, of course. They have a very leftist ideology, although they are not... Marxist or no Marxist Leninist. They are feminist.
Right.
Which I think it even upsets more people.
I think if you're
feminist with a weapon on your hands, it's
you're
really
a feminist with an AK-47. That's pretty much upsetting right across the board. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's very funny. but I think pretty interesting. I love the metaphor and the moment when she talks about her arm healing.
Yeah.
And her line is, and I wrote it down, and she says, she's responding to somebody about it, the exercise and it getting better. And she says, I know, she's answering the question. I can and I will, I just need more time.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. To me, that was sort of, I mean, there's great lines throughout the film, but I mean, is that what this part of the world needs? Is that what we all need? I mean, that sort of presupposes that we've got it sorted out, because we don't.
Yeah.
You know, we like to think we're a little more feminist here in the West.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, I couldn't also help but think about the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think there's a direct quote in the film where one of the women says, Me Too. And I wondered how intentional that was.
Completely. I always said that one of the, this movement of women lacks of some good PR to do marketing for them and connect them with the fights, because the fight of this woman is connected to the fight of all women around the world.
It's common,
and
right?
Of course, Me Too, and they can say Me Too, I've been, my house has been destroyed, Me Too, I've been harassed, Me Too, I've been violated by even a Turkish military, Me Too, I've been, of course, and I think we need to realize that we are all connected.
She said at one point too, early on in the film, that she didn't want to fall in love too much with life, because then she'd be afraid of death, which made me think she wasn't very hopeful. And yet, when you see her talking with these young women, and in order to have that kind of passion and that kind of commitment, you kind of have to be hopeful, it seems to me.
No, of course. But I think what she means is that for her, it's about having a normal life. Like when for her, the fact that she's fighting for a bigger goal than the one of her own survival or of her own, that gives her a sense that makes her stay over death. And that's why she says that if I wasn't fighting for this bigger goal, then I will be scared of death.
Right.
And that's why it's also a drama for her now, not because of her wound. The biggest drama for her is that he cannot be part of this fight again, although she has to find another way to be part of the fight.
She has to, she has to get involved in another way. And did she say she's left the country now? Is that right?
No. She's in Rojava. She left Afrin because the hospital where she was working was bombed by a Turkish airplane.
Oh, okay.
And now she's in Aleppo.
Right, because you end the film talking about her helping with the survivors.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about one shot in particular? And I'd love to hear more about you and why this story and how you got connected. But it sounds like you had friends and almost family members, almost, by the sound of it. There's a scene with a water truck.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? A water truck that drives by.
Uh-huh,
and there's, I think, children. And I love the shot. But to tell me why you included that shot.
It shows a lot about when everything comes back to normality, you know, and it's that all about this ending, no? About
an absurdity to it, right? Because aren't we in the middle of basically bombed out buildings? It's just completely rubble, right?
Yeah.
And what are these guys watering? Are they just playing a game? Like, that's the way I saw it. I thought it was
Yeah, but still, no, there is some water and somebody takes advantage of this moment of what else can he wash his car? No, there is
That's
no.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think what's lovely about that is too, it shows you the reach, the implications. I mean, obviously, war is horrific and tragic, and the trauma and so on. But we don't really think about all of the implications. How long is this war really going to be fought for, even when it's over? The trauma, the transgenerational impact, the PTSD, the all of that, you know, the violence and the broken families. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And gender disparity, right? I mean, like you say, it's her wound's going to heal, but how long is this going to take, right? Which I guess is a question you're kind of asking us all, I suppose. So you, why so... You said if you'd known, you might not have gone. tell me more.
I think I've been connected with the Kurdish movement since ages, because when I was in my 20s, I traveled to Kurdistan. I made a film about a Kurdish activist. And when this happened, when the war in Syria started and the YPG was formed, I couldn't believe that was all these ideas that the Kurdish movement had been building up through years about feminism, and because the Kurdish woman have been organized and has been talking about these eco-feminist ideas and feminist ideas since ages, and that to see that this was happening, like in the praxis,
right.
No, that
right.
was not only the ideas, but that they were implementing these ideas,
and that they wasn't just theory.
Exactly, I really felt I wanted to go, and quite in impulse. I don't know if it's impulsively, but it didn't take a long time since I decided I wanted to do something, and I went. So I just went, basically. I didn't. And
big crew? Did you have a big crew?
No, I went on my own. I went.
Wow.
yeah. First time I went on my own. After that, I tried to bring a crew, but I had really like the usually the people that usually works with me, they were not. It's really complicated to.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for so many reasons. How did you manage sound? And I mean, it's a gorgeous film.
It was all on my own. Guerrilla way, all on my own.
Your own kind of guerrilla. Yes, with your own kind of
weapon.
It
was funny because I really was, when I was there, I was given a uniform, so I was part of the group.
Oh, wow. That's a liability.
Yeah, actually, I guess it
you
was
blend
because
in.
Yeah, my clothes was not appropriate
right,
for the front
right,
because
right.
it was the color, it was colorful,
sure.
and so it was not safe.
Sure.
So they thought it was safer for me to be dressed like them. Yeah. But as soon as I wore the uniform, and I thought, okay, if now we are captured.
Well, you're a target. You're now a target.
Exactly.
As well.
But then I thought, like, even I mean, for the Islamic State, it doesn't matter. You're a journalist. I think it's even worse. So it's okay if they think
it might. It might be even worse.
Yeah.
That's true. Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. There's a line in the film, I believe it's from her, Ariane, where she says, "We've proven that women can fight."
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Of course, it's proven because of the direct achievements they've done. They've liberated cities. They've liberated Raqqa, which is the capital. It was the capital of the Islamic State.
It's remarkable.
They've done it. Yeah, it's amazing.
It really is amazing.
You know, in the beginning, the Islamic State was really afraid when they were coming because. If you are killed, if you are a member of the Islamic State and you are killed by a woman, you won't go to heaven.
Oh, why? It's like some sort of shameful thing to be killed by a woman?
Of course.
You've got to be kidding.
And they were running away.
How
so the woman were arriving and they were running away.
I would say dying, at the end of a bullet is a bad idea either way, no matter who fires it. That's unbelievable. It makes sense, though. So you end the film, I think, with raising even further questions.
Mm-hmm.
And a lovely moment of this possibility of hope that there maybe is life now in the rubble. There is a market growing and there is things happening. There's a tiny bit of life. We've got the water truck and maybe the kids playing. We're not quite.
Yeah.
And the lovely chatter about how things are getting expensive now. With this,
yeah, which is also it's part of how life. Life.
It's so lovely.
Yeah.
And it's,
And somehow it raises questions on, for me, no, on how the dream of making this better world.
Right, right.
It still has these things of capitalism
sure,
is
sure,
always squeezing into any kind of utopia.
How much of a slave are we to the free market, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I mean, that's a whole other kind of slavery that we could be talking about. That's remarkable. How long did it take you to actually shoot? You said you were just there for about a month, but
no, because it was different periods. There.
Oh, I see.
So
right,
I started
course.
Shooting in 2015. Yeah. I was there first time on March. Then I came back on April and May, and I went there many times until the last shooting was in 2017.
Wow. Okay.
At the end of 2017.
Well, it's a remarkable film, and again, I hope everybody sees it. And welcome to Hot Docs. And are you anxious? Are you?
Yeah, it's the first time that we show the film publicly.
Okay.
It's our world premiere, and I'm really, really looking forward to share the film with people.
Well, I wish you well with it, and again, I hope everyone sees it. We've been talking with Alba Sotera Clua about her new film, Commander Aria. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.